We're up to a new Perek Lamed. Perek Lamed, Pasuk Aleph. The Perek begins, Hoy Bonim Soyrim, Lu'um Hashem. Woe to these wayward children, so says Hashem. These are the words of Hashem. Hashem is complaining about his children that they are Soyrim. Soyrim means wayward. The Mitzudos translates it, Nitiya Mederech Hayosha. There is the straight path, and when one deviates from the straight path and he goes along the crooked path, that is called to be sorer, like a ben sorer umore, a child who goes astray. What exactly is the theme, the complaint of this parak? So as we'll see, it is we have to always define the time period. That's probably the most critical piece of information that we need as a hakdama to any section of Nevi'im. And the time period here is not—it's not clear what it's referring to. It's referring to the Malchus of Yehuda. That is clear. The Malchus of Yehuda, seemingly after the time after the Golus of the Aseres Hashvatim, is it after Chizkiyahu's miraculous survival? After the Sennacherib, it appears it's before. It's at some point in time between the Golus of the Aseres Hashvatim and the event where Sanherib miraculously, with his 185,000 soldiers and generals, suddenly died in the middle of the night. They were worried. Malchus of Yehuda was extremely worried that they would be attacked by the Malchus of Ashur. Just like their brothers, the Malchus of Yehuda was attacked and crumbled and defeated and conquered and sent into Galus. So what did people do during this period of time? So we know what Chizkiyah did. Chizkiyah, he rallied the people that they should do tshuva and they should learn Torah. And that's Chosar Teuda Chasom Torah Bilimudoi. We know that Chizkiyah, his focus was to do tshuva, learn Torah, and that would be a merit to save Klal Yisrael, which indeed it was. But the Hamonam, the simple people, they felt that they should take matters into their own hand. You need a shtadlus. Now, of course, you need a shtadlus. That goes without saying. But what's the ikar? Is the ikar to rely upon a Kadosh Baruch Hu? Is the ikar to rely upon to do hishtadlus? What was the hishtadlus? To make an alliance with the Mitzrayim. At that point in time, Mitzrayim was a world power. They were at least as powerful as the Malchus of Ashur. Eventually, Mitzrayim was conquered by Ashur. But in the earlier period of time, before they conquered Mitzrayim and Cush and all the other nations, Mitzrayim was a major player. They were a significant force in the world and perhaps even a greater superpower than Ashur. And the Jewish people of Judah felt their only chance of survival was to make an alliance with Egypt and basically to bribe them, to give them gifts and to pay them, to convince them that it's in their own best interest to come to the aid of Eretz Yisrael, of the Malchus of Yehuda. So here we're going to see that the people of Yehuda, they would send lavish gifts and send messengers and send representatives to Mitzrayim and basically beg Mitzrayim or bribe them or flatter them, to convince them that if we are attacked, come to our aid. Or even before we are attacked, show that you are with us. And that will deter Ashur from trying to conquer us. Very similar to what, I don't mean in a big way, but I mean like today, Eretz Yisrael, we have Obama said not so long ago that don't worry, in case anything happens with Iran, America got your back. He said that, it was a public, it's in the news, we got your back. We're gonna, Baruch Hashem, today we don't live in a madriga today where we can say we don't need to do hishtadlus. There's no question about it. Every bit of hishtadlus that we can do, we must do. That's a given. We're not living such spiritual lives where everything happens by itself. But this is the whole purpose of learning the Nevi'im. You do your hishtadlus, and you do it very well. But you have to realize your faith is not in human beings. You have to put your faith in HaKadosh Baruch. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be with us, and if He's with us, in Memela, our shtalus will be successful, everything will fall into place. Here the complaint is there was too much reliance upon a shtalus of the alliance with Egypt instead of relying upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he severely criticizes Bnei Yisrael for what they have done, especially because this whole plan was done without the advice, the consent, and the participation of the Nevi'im. The people just did it. And instead of going to the Nevi'im and ask them, should we do it? How should we do it? Maybe you should go on our behalf. You should give us instructions how it should be done. No, we don't need you. We're not interested in you. You sit in the Beis Medrash, preach, do your thing, don't bother us, we'll take care of what we need to do, we will send gifts and messengers to Egypt, and they will be of assistance to us in our time of need. So this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is complaining. It comes from the Hashem, these are the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem Himself is complaining that my children, they are bonim, sorim, they have turned away from the derech ha-yoshar, from the right path, from the straight path, and they have gone off the derech. What have they done? The pasuk continues, la'asos eitzah. They have carried out their plans. Lasos means to carry out, eats other plans. But v'loy mini, but it's not my plan. Hashem says this is a big mistake. This plan to go to Egypt and to convince them to come to your aid, that was, if you would have asked me, I would have told you it's not a good idea. V'linsoch masecha. Linsoch masecha means to shelter yourself with a covering. A masecha. There are many interpretations. Here, according to the Mesuzah, it means schach. Just like we put schach on our sukkah, it's a masecha, it's a covering. Linsoch means to spread the covering. In other words, it's a metaphor that our shelter, our protection, when it's hot or it's raining, you shelter yourself in a hut. Bnei Yisrael find themselves now at a time of danger. They need to shelter themselves from the enemy. What are they going to use as their shelter? Egypt. They're going to use them, linsoich ma'asecha, to spread a shelter. V'lo ruchi, my spirit is not with you. Hashem says, this is not what I advise. Laman, and by ignoring me, and not consulting with my prophets, and focusing on koichi, the oitzem yadi, your own ideas and your own power, you're going to accomplish nothing other than leman sifos chatos al chatos. Sifos means to add, to accumulate one sin upon another. You deepen yourself in sin. You add one sin to another sin. It's a form of rebellion when you have prophets and to ignore them and take matters into your own hands. This is a terrible sin, and it's just a pile of sin. One sin adds to the other. Pasuk Beis. Now we elaborate exactly what they did. Holchem leredes Mitzrayim. Those who go down to descend to Egypt. Egypt is in the south, so I guess we consider it to go down where Yerushalayim is on the hill. Yerushalayim is, Chazal tell us, is the highest point of the world, even though it's not necessarily true in the physical sense, but in the spiritual sense. And Egypt is called the Ervas Aretz. It's called the nakedness of the earth. It's so going from Eretz Yisrael to Egypt represents an idea, at least spiritually, of going down. Aholchem loredes Mitzrayim ufi lo yishalu. So here Yeshaya, he compliments HaKadosh Baruch Hu. First, he says in the Pasuk, Afnei Mekadosh Baruch Hu Nu Hashem. I'm telling you something in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Here in Pasuk Beis, he's saying that you have not consulted with me. Yeshaya says, I am Hashem's representative. I am the major prophet of the day. Putting all humility aside, I'm the prophet. Hashem speaks to Klal Yisrael through me. So what is this all about? You make such a major decision without consulting with me, Ufilo Sha'alu, La'os b'ma'os Paro, to take strength in the might of Paro. You strengthen yourself in his might. You think that his might, his power, his military power is what's going to save you from your enemy, Ashur. The lachsos, and to take shelter, but sell Mitzrayim in the shade of Egypt. Different expressions describing your reliance upon Egypt. So Hashem says it's a big mistake, because you know what's going to happen? V'hoyu lachem ma'oz paro. The end will be that the strength of paro will be levoshes, will be nothing more than an embarrassment. V'hechosus. Betzel Mitzrayim Lechlima, Chasus means the same thing. It means your shelter, your reliance upon in your this, and you take shelter in the shadow of Egypt will be Lechlima, a disgrace. Two words which mean the same thing, Boshes and Chlima. Some of our Hashem say Boshes, where a person embarrasses himself. He does things which are foolish. He has brought embarrassment upon himself. Chlima is where someone embarrasses you. You're standing, you're doing your own thing. You're waiting for a bus, and someone comes along and starts screaming at you in front of everyone, and starts embarrassing you. What did I do? I didn't bring this upon myself. This has been brought upon me by others. This is the same thing. By going to Mitzrayim, number one, it is foolish. It is something which you are embarrass yourself, and others will embarrass you for this foolish decision to rely upon Egypt. And here the pasuk elaborates what exactly they did. Ki hayu v'tzo'an sarav. Sarav means the princes, the leaders of the Jewish people, the diplomats, the chashuvim. They found themselves in the city of Tzoan. Tzoan was one of the major cities of Egypt, where they lobbied that Egypt should send some, give them money, send some equipment, some tanks, some planes, some defense systems. Malachov. Malachov means the messengers. That corresponds to Sarov, princes. And then there are Malachov, there are messengers. Chones Yagiu Chones. Chones is Memphis. Is that what Chones is? I believe no, it's not Memphis. Okay, what's Memphis in Hebrew? What are they associated? What?
I think it's Mof.
Mof. Okay. So here is Chones is short for Tispanches. This was an ancient city. What? Tachpanches. This was an ancient Egyptian city, and here in this pasuk it's shortened to the word Chones. This appears to have been the capital. This appears at this point in time. Could be different points in time in the history of Egypt. Long history, there were different capitals, different centers were set aside as the center of government. But at this point in time, Mepharshim said Chones, which was Tachpanches, was the capital of Egypt, and the Malach of the messengers of the Jewish people found themselves there. Yagiu, they have reached to lobby the Egyptians to help them from their enemy. Kol, but Pasuk goes on and says Kol means every single one of you, all the collective group of Eretz Yisrael, the entire Jewish people will be Hovish. Hovish is an unusual word. There appears to be an extra aleph. I have an aleph and a yud which have no nikud. And over here, the aleph appears to be extra. And hovish means will be ashamed. It's another word which parallels the previous pasuk of boshes and chlima. And how we have now a third word, another expression of shame, of embarrassment. Al-am lo yo'il. And that they relied upon a nation which was of no help whatsoever. Egypt did nothing for the Jewish people at this lamo. Lamo means for them, upon them. They did nothing to help, to assist the Jewish people. Lo le'ezer, they didn't come, they didn't help. Lo le'ho'il, they did not provide any assistance. Ki levoshes, v'gam lecherpa, again these two words, they were not, this that the Jewish people relied upon Egypt was nothing more for the Jewish people than a boshes, an embarrassment that they brought upon themselves, and a cherpa, a disgrace, a fourth word. A cherpa, another word of disgrace that was heaped upon the Jewish people. How foolish could you be to think that they're going to come to your aid? So in total, we have your four words. It's interesting. We have boshes, chlima, hovish, and cherpa. It's fascinating. Four different expressions of shame for the foolish decision of the people to rely upon Egypt, and they did not, where nothing came from that. Pasuk Vav continues, what exactly did they do? What was their technique? Masa Bahamos Negev. Remember, Egypt is in the south of Eretz Yisrael. Negev means south, but Masa in Yeshayah always means a prophecy, but it doesn't mean that here in this context. Many prokhim begin with the word Masa, means a burden. Burden means it's a heavy weight, a message which is weighs down upon me, which I have to release by giving over to the Jewish people. But that's not what it means here. It means in a literal sense is packages, gifts. They took their donkeys, their bahamos, their animals, and they loaded the animals with heavy packages, weight of gifts, of presents, gold, silver, money, exotic items that were delivered as gifts to the people of Egypt as a bribe. Negev to the south, the Eretz, now, and the Jewish people, not like it today, where you just get on a plane. It was sakonis nefoshos to travel from Eretz Yisrael during this period of time to Egypt, especially since Ashur, they conquered most of the civilized world by this time. It was dangerous. You had to travel through the desert, and the desert is a place of snakes and scorpions and thirst and heat and all different dangers, all different types of dangers. And yet the Jewish people, they risked their lives to go down to Egypt to deliver these gifts, in hope that they would come to their aid. Masa, a burden of Bahamos upon their animals. Negev, down to the south. the Eretz through a land of tzara v'tzuka. Tzara means troubled. Tzuka is another word of tzara, of difficulty, of oppression, the desert, a place, lavi vo laish, mayhem. That means, lavi of laish are two words which refer to lions. A lion, there are seven words in Tanakh that describe a lion. Some of the Farshim, there's seven different stages in the development of a lion. From a baby lion until an adult lion, Arya Yelchor is the adult, and a lavi could be is the earliest stage, but it doesn't make a difference. In every stage of the life of the lion, it is equally as dangerous. Different stages in its life, and here we have two different stages in the development of a lion, but just means that a lion's lavi v'laish, mayhem, meaning in that land, from that land of the desert where you are traveling, you will encounter the dangers of the lavi v'laish. Efa is a type of snake, a poisonous snake. And this saraf me'oifef, saraf is a serpent. It's also a type of snake me'oifef, which flies. It doesn't mean a flying serpent. It doesn't mean the old parsha. It doesn't mean there's no such thing as a flying serpent. As to me, I don't know the difference what a serpent is anyway. But whatever it is, it doesn't really fly. It jumps, and because it jumps, it appears as if it flies. That's why it has this term called a saraf me'oifef, the flying serpent. Yisu, so the Jewish people, they risk their lives by sending gifts upon their animals through this very dangerous land, the desert, which is Sarvet Sukkah, where they encounter in this land mayhem, in this land they encounter the Lavi Velayish, and they encounter the Efer, and they encounter the Saf Moifef. And what do? Yisu al Kesef Avorim. Avorim is a young donkey, an Ayar. A Kesef Ayarim. Sorry, it's a Kuvach Sif. Pasuk is with the vav, but we read with the yud. Ayarim is a young donkey. Young donkeys were used in those times for transportation. They were out the cargo planes. Chelehem, their wealth. They would put their wealth upon these donkeys and use them as means of transport to Egypt. V'yalda beshes gimalim otzirosam, their treasures. What is a dabeshes gimalim? It means the hump of a camel. Why in the world is the hump of a camel called a dabeshes? So over here it says in the Parshim Mitzvot, because it was very common in ancient times that the hump would get bruised. It was abused. The camels were used as means of transport, and being that the hump sticks out, and you put the package on the hump and you tie it, it gets bruised, and it causes the animal pain. So what did you do? What was the refuah? The refuah to heal a bruised hump was to smear dvash, honey. This was standard procedure. You smear the hump of the camel with honey. So over time, the hump was called by the honey instead of it being called by the hump. That's why the hump is called the dabeshes. The hump is the dabeshes because it was always smeared with honey, gimalim, oats or some their treasures. Where do they deliver all of these goods? El amlo yo'ilu, repeating the theme before, to a nation, you foolish, you're going to Egypt, they are a nation that's not going to be of any assistance to you whatsoever. Period. Zayid, umitzrayim, here Hashem says, a very powerful pasuk, hevel vorik, ya'azoru, their assistance is worthless. Hevel vorik, these are two of the expressions which mean, davar she'ein v'imamish. Hevel is just air. Rik is rake, empty. It's emptied out. Two expressions which mean worthless. Foolishness. You go to Egypt, you think they're going to help you, they'll do nothing. They'll sit back when they'll see Asher attack. They'll turn their heads, be a blind eye. Lo, hevel vorik yazoru, lochein devan, because they are the Egyptians. They provide no assistance. L'chein, therefore, karasi lozos, I've called this situation of where you are relying upon Egypt, rahav heim shavis. What is rahav? We had this before in Yeshaya. Yirhavu ha Hayeled Bezokin, arrogance. One of the curses of Tzimos HaMashiach is Chutzpah Yaski. And Chutzpah Yaski, that's the expression of Chazal. Chazal's words, Chutzpah. But in Yeshaya, it's Chutzpah, is the word for Chutzpah means Yirhavu. Yirhavu, Rahav, arrogance. Not just some arrogance. The arrogance is Geus, Gaiva. Rahav means Chutzpah. That's the real word for Chutzpah, not Chutzpah. Rahav, Yirhavu, Hayeled Bezokein, and here Hashem says about Egypt, they are Rahav, they have Chutzpah, not just arrogance, Lahachas. Chutzpah is an arrogance with a Lahachas. You take the extra step to show your arrogance. And that is what Egypt is. Rahav, Hayman, Shavas means they sit back and do absolutely nothing. Shavas means bittle. Bittle, they sit and they do nothing. Okay, so that is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu complains against the people of Egypt. Look at the Mitzudos David, Shaves, Veheim Am Batel, Veeinam Roitzim Lazo, they do nothing, they don't want help. So this is the complaint of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Bnei Yisrael, how dare you on your own go to Egypt and seek their assistance when they're not going to come to your aid. Pasuk Ches Atah now, Bow come, kosva luach itam, write it on the tablet that is with you, the al sefer chukun, upon the book I want you to inscribe, usihi liyoyim acharon, it should be a remembrance for the day that comes at the end, la'ad ad olam, forever and ever. What, let me just go, will be the next passage, I'm going to come back and explain this very powerful passage, but what do I want you to write? I want you to write Ki Am Mirihu, that you are a rebellious nation. This is a very great sin. This sin, it's described, we have many sins, and every sin is described in its unique form. This sin is also described in a very powerful way, which we'll repeat in one moment. But what is the sin? You are a nation that is Mirihu, Ki Am Mirihu, a nation that is rebellious. Bonim Kechoshim, you are liars. Shakarim, Sheker, Lashon of Sheker, you are liars. Bonim loy avu shemo atoras Hashem, you don't want to listen to the law of Hashem. What's the sin? The sin is you refuse to rely upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Instead, you wish to put your faith, your reliance upon Basar Vadam. In this instance, rely upon Mitzrayim. How is, I want this to be, I want you to take note of your sin, and I want this sin to be preserved. You should remember this forever. And now let's go back and read again Pasuk Ches. How do I want you to remember the sin? Atonel bo, kosva, I want you to write aluach itam on the tablet that is with you, with them, itam, that is with them. You have tablets all over the place. I want it to be written on these tablets. And then Yeshua repeats himself, I want it to be written, Yal Sefer Chukah, I want it, Chukah means to be inscribed upon the Sefer. And therefore, when it's written and inscribed on all the, your tablets and your books, it will be Ustihi Liyoyim Acharon, it will remain forever and ever in your history books, to the days, Liyoyim Acharon, the end of days, La'ad ad olam, forever and ever, you should always remember the sin, and when punishment comes upon you, you should always say to yourself, I deserve it. A person shouldn't forget, sometimes a person is punished, I don't know why I'm punished, I can't remember what I do wrong. You have to think and think and think, and Hashem says you shouldn't have to think. I want it to be preserved, wherever you go, it should be written in the history books, on all of your tablets and books, the terrible sin that you have committed by relying upon Mitzrayim and not relying upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now here's a very interesting idea in this pasuk. There are two ways to write, especially in ancient times. Today we don't write. Today, if Yishai was talking, we'd say, type it into your iPad and your laptop, BlackBerry, you just click away. But in the olden days, there were two ways, two techniques of preserving the written word. Number one was to write on a sefer, like a sefer Torah, right? That's what we really pretty much what's been given over to us. You have parchment, a book of parchment is called a sefer, it's called the book, and you have ink, and you apply the ink to the parchment. That's called kesiva. If you ever learn, never experiment with the safas, writing on a parchment, writing a Sefer Torah is not the way you write with a pen and pen. It's very, very different. When you write with a pen, a modern pen, you move the pen. As you move the pen, ink naturally is released from the pen and it's on the paper. It's not the way it works when you write. You release ink, dioi, and you pull it. You moishech, you pull the ink to form letters. It's an entirely different type of writing. If you ever have the opportunity to experiment with ksavashuris, writing in a Sefer Torah, it's a whole different ballgame. But the point is, you're using ink, and the ink is being applied to a piece of paper, to parchment. The paper is called the Sefer, and the dioi, the ink, is applying the ink is called the dioi, and applying the ink to the paper is called kisiva. Then there's another technique, wax boards. There were boards, or not necessarily boards, it could even have been stone. They were boards, and then you take a chisel and you etch words, you carve out, you engrave words upon a stone. And today, I think what we have today, going back to the time of the Bayis Sheni, and even every so often they tell us that they find artifacts from the Bayis Rishon, these are all preserved from things which have been etched in stone. What are the terms, the exact terms used in this in the Vim? It's called chok, chuka or chakika means to etch, chakika, chokek. In what? On a luach, on a tablet. And normally it was a tablet of wax, was wood or other some material that was covered with wax, but also it can refer to etching words into stone, chakik, into a luach of evan, into a tablet of, to you inscribe on a tablet of stone. So if you were writing this pasuk and you wanted to be poetic and eloquent and repeat yourself twice, how would you write this pasuk? You would write, Atah now, Yeshaya speaks to Jewish people, you have done a terrible sin, I want you to remember this sin, don't forget the sin, so when you're punished, you should know why you're punished. And how are you going to, I want it to be preserved, you would say, Bo kosva al sefer itam, write it, ksiva, apply the ink to a sefer, to parchment that is with you, and then vialuach chuka, and upon your tablets you should etch the words. What is going on here? How come the words over here are mismatched? Why are they intermingled? So perhaps the answer is, each type of preservation of words upon matter has a maila and a chasaron. The maila of chakika, of etching words into stone, is it lasts forever. Matseva, you never saw a matseva on paper. Matsevas are on stone and the words are etched into stone. But the chasaron is, okay, today there's new technology, so it's a little bit different, but it used to be, go look at the old matsevos, it's not so easy always to read words that are etched in stone, because the word it's etched. You have to see the tsura that is etched in the stone. When you write something on paper, ink on paper, it stands out. Black ink on a white piece of paper, it makes an impression. It's easy to read, it's clear, you see it, and you know what it says. But how long will it last? Okay, today, everything, you can't compare. We were so brainwashed, living in a modern society, the inks today can last forever. And the Dioyin of Sefer Torah, today, the Dioyin and the new Sefer Torah could last forever. The Dioyin, go back 100 years ago, they didn't have the technology, and the inks. They after 50 years it turns red, it peels, it falls off, it leaves a stain. But traditionally, going even back, not only 100 years ago, when you were, ink did not last more than 50 years, 100 years, whatever it was. It doesn't last forever, ink. Okay, after the Dead Sea Scrolls, ink, the things that did last. So you have the right environments. You have a good environment, there's no humidity, things can last a very long time, but generally speaking, there's a danger. Ink is susceptible to the times, elements which can peel, can fall off. It's not necessarily going to last forever. But in its time, when it's written on the piece of paper, at least at that moment when it's written, at least for the near future, You can see what it says. Something that's etched in stone will last forever. But it's not so clear. You have to pay attention. You have to look carefully. What does it say? What exactly does it say? Now, of course, today they do both. Today on a matzeva, they etch the words and then they apply ink, and they have special inks which they claim can last forever, and there's new technology, and they fill in the gaps, and you pay more money to have it, this type of ink, that type of ink. The people involved in making a matzeva, you know, all these different new things are available today, but that's not the way it was before. So here Yeshai is saying, I want you to write this down, and I want the milus of both. I want you to remember your sin with the utmost clarity, and I want it to be preserved also with the utmost clarity. And therefore he's intertwining, he's mingling these ideas together. The ksiva should be permanent. How should the ksiva be permanent? It should be on a luach. It should be as if it's in a tablet. It's etched into a tablet. And the chakika should be like a ksiva where it's clear. So he's mixing up these terms to try to express that I want you to preserve this sin with the utmost clarity, combine the milos, the advantages of both forms of writing. The advantage of the engraving with the advantage of the dioi, which is clear upon the surface of a piece of paper. And that's why these terms over here are being mixed together. Bo kasva luach itam, on the tablet that is with you, that you have in your possession, the al sefer chuka, and upon a book, I wanted you to etch the words, usili yamachon, it should be for you forever. Lo'ad ad olam, another expression, ever and ever, that you should remember what's the sin again, until Pasuk Yabez, ki amar, you are a nation of sinners, you are rebels. Bonim kechashim, liars. Bonim, children, like Avu Shemoya Taras Hashem, very scary. Three different expressions. Two expressions of Bonim and one expression of a nation. Pasik Yud, Asha Amru, and here and here he continues to say, why don't you ask the prophets? Because you don't want to hear what the prophets have to say. Asha Amru Leroyim, you say to the Royim, to the seers, the Roa, Anochi Haroa, we have this in Shmuel. Prophet in ancient times was called the Roeh. Now we call a Navi. Navi comes from the word Niv Sifasai, the utterance of his lips. But what is a Navi? A Navi is a Roeh. He sees into the future, he sees the big picture, he sees what really is behind the deeper meaning of everything that's happening. Asha Amru L'Roim, you say to the Roeh, to the prophets, Lo Siru, don't look! Don't look, we don't want to hear bad news. Don't tell us, don't give us musa, don't tell us about churban that's going to come. V'la chayzim. Chayzim, just parallel, another word, repetition, poetic repetition. La chayzim, the visionaries. The chayza. Chayza means one who sees, someone who has a vision. Chazon Yeshayahu ben Amotz. Chazon, a vision. Different experiment. The chozev lublin. Okay. A lot later. Someone who has a vision. We learned there are 10 expressions for a prophet, a prophecy is masa, whatever, I don't remember, that's the first one, the first midrash from the Sefer Yeshaya, chazoin Yeshaya ben Amot, it's one of the most powerful expressions, the harshest expression is a choyze, v'la choyzim, lo sechezu lanu, nichochos, don't see for us what is upright. Nichochos means yosha. Don't look and see the straight path, because we don't want to go on the straight path. We want to live a crooked life. It's much more interesting. It's much more fun. Don't tell us the right way to go. Daru lonu chalakos. Talk, chalakos means smooth. Smooth talk. That's where it comes from. That comes from everything. Everything comes from the Vim. This is the source. Many expressions today, English, Latin comes from Latin, but even the Latin comes from Yeshaya, comes from Tanakh. Chalakos, smooth talk. Just tell us good, comfortable lullabies. Don't tell us anything that we can't deal with, that's too harsh, that's too scary. Bedtime stories. Chazu mahasalos. Mahasalos means hito, means a joke. Be a comedian. You're in the wrong business. You're a prophet? We don't want a prophet, we want comedians. We want over here to hire someone to come and give us those jokes. Chazus si mahasalos, jokes. Comedy.
Amuse us.
This we want you. Tell us, tell see. That's what we want you to preach. Su mine derech. And they tell the prophet, get off the road. Turn away from the derech, from the proper straight path. Hatu mine orach. Hatu also means to turn aside. Same thing as suru mine orach. Orach means the path. Hashbisu mi panenu es kidosh Yisrael. Enough religion. Enough Ribbono Shel Olam. Hashbisu means shavas. Let it come to an end. The kidosh Yisrael HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Unbelievable. Enough of this. Enough religious talk. Let's watch a good movie, some comedy, something that is enjoyable. Musar and Torah, we don't want. This is what Hashem says, and this was a terrible sin. And Hashem says, don't forget your sin, and when I punish you, you should know you're getting what you deserve. And the only way you'll remember is if you record your sin for posterity and by with these expressions he has over here with Kasaluach Itam and Sefer Chukah. Okay,
we have one question. You learned before in Yeshaya gave up with the adults, right? Remember he said, I'm not going to talk to the adults.
It's hopeless.
I got to talk to the kids, right?
Well, there were different opinions.
So he's still talking to the adults here at the same time period or a different time?
When he says that I'm not going to talk to the adults, doesn't necessarily mean he gave up. He means it's a form of musar. You're hopeless. But it doesn't mean you're hopeless. It means if I'll tell you you're hopeless, maybe you'll make an impression, you'll be moved, and you'll do tshuva. There's a very important theme that's brought out by the son of the Farshim. What was the purpose of all this nevuah? Anyway, you didn't listen. The base Hamilush was destroyed. So why did Hashem bother sending prophets, Yeshaya, Yecheskel, Yirmiyah, the Nevim of the Treyaser? What did it help? So the Farshim explained it did help. Even though at the time they did not accept the words of the Navi, they mocked the Nevi'im. We learn Yirmiyah, they plucked out his beard. They imprisoned him. They put him in jail. He said, Meshugana, enough of this. They locked him up. They tortured him. They tortured the Nevi'im. They mocked them. But the words of the Nevi'im made an impression, a subconscious impression, not at the time. After they went into Golos, it ringed in their head the Musar of the Navi, and they say, you know, he was right, we have to do tshuva. If Yeshaya, Yirmiyah, Yechezkel would not have given Bnei Yisrael Musar at this point in time, then when the Churban would have happened, it would have been over. Klal Yisrael would have come to an end, they would have been extinct. Because we sinned, it's over, there's nothing we can do, and that's it, forget it, it's all over. That's what would have happened. It's because he gave them Musar. At the time, they did not act upon the Musar. They didn't go the next step, but it made an impression. And that impression is what saved them. Years later, after the Churban happened, they had the tools and they had the guidance, the knowledge, what to do to return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that they could be once again a Bayis Sheni and ultimately a Bayis Shlishi. So it wasn't a waste. The words of Musar were dormant. They were there, and ultimately, at a later point in time, they came back to life. That's a theme which is brought out by a number of the Mefarshim, and that's why it's preserved for all time. The Chazal tell us there were 1,200,000 prophets. Can you imagine memorizing all their names? 1,200,000 prophets. Double Yotzei Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim, there was 600,000 Jews. There was double number of prophets than the people who actually left Mitzrayim. However, how many Nevi'im have been preserved? The words of Nevi'im have been preserved. What?
48.
Different people. I don't know. The women, the men. Is that the number?
Six.
Six and the women also. There are seven women who are prophets. Yeah. But they are. What has been preserved are the prophecies that today, in modern times, we can learn from. We can learn from that even though these words have been spoken to a generation, now some prophecies were spoken to us. Yeshayahu saw things at the end of days. He saw America. He saw Tavshin, Chayalah from Tavshin Ayin Beis. He saw this. We have Nevuah. how exactly, so what exactly, so it's not exactly clear, but even if you learn the psukim on a very simple level, that he was speaking to the people of his generation, of his day, there's mussar in those words, there's lessons for us to apply to our lives and our times, and that's why the words of these prophets were preserved for all time. Okay, let's stop here. Okay, Mishnah Berurah.